Okay, ladies and gentlemen, it is a real pleasure to welcome to the Solari Report Daniel Post-Senning, who is a member of the Emily Post Institute and the great-great-grandson of Emily Post, author of a book called Etiquette with various subtitles in the many editions, now in the 19th edition. And Dan, as he goes by, is the co-author of the 19th edition, which I have sitting here. Before I bring him in, I just want to mention, also sitting here is the third edition, which I was raised on. The one I have was published in 1939. After the first edition had gone through 17 printings, the second edition, 25 printings, and the third edition started in 1937. I have a copy of the eighth printing by the fall of 1939. So it's fair to say this is a book which has taken the world by storm. I think it's one of the most successful books and certainly the most valuable books, you know, we've seen come out of America. Anyway, so the Emily Post Institute keeps that tradition going, and Daniel has several books to his credit. One, which is very important for this conversation, is on digital manners in an online society. So, Dan, before I bring you in, I just have to note that your degree, your college degree, is in molecular biology, and given what it takes to apply etiquette to a digital world, I have to tell you, I think that's the most appropriate background for what you now do with the Emily Post Institute. So welcome to the Solari Report. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for that warm and generous introduction. I really appreciate it.
Well, tell us a little bit about the Institute's work and all the resources that are available.
Sure. The Emily Post Institute, as you mentioned, is a five-generation family business. It was founded by Emily, my great-great-grandmother, to promote etiquette and civility in America, primarily through the continuing publication of book Etiquette, which, as you noted, has gone through a series of evolutions as it's gone through now 19 editions. We're preparing to begin the writing process of the 20th edition for release in 2022 for the 100-year anniversary of the tradition. The first book of etiquette was published in 1922. And in more recent years, sort of the challenge for my generation stewarding this tradition has really been to navigate the transition into the digital world. And more we're finding that emilypost.com is the central location where people find Emily Post and find the information that we have to offer, both the traditional information and the new information. So it's been fun. It's, as is often the case, it's a challenge and an opportunity. We're finding that for us as a business, navigating that content transition from print media to the online space really parallels the way a lot of our social lives are transitioning into that online space as well. So it's in many ways appropriate and an appropriate place to continue this tradition.
Right. And there are many, many resources. Well, as we close, we'll go through them. But it's you and Lizzie, your cousin, do a podcast?
We do. We host the Awesome Etiquette podcast, which happens every week. And it's a classic Q&A format show where we answer four or five listener-submitted questions each week and discuss in slightly more detail a topic of etiquette in a section we call the postscript. And then we finish the show with something we call the etiquette salute, which is our reminder that civility and etiquette are not dead, that they are alive and well, that there are lots of good examples of people being kind and decent to each other, both in little ways and in big ways, and it's our chance to highlight one of those and remind ourselves and our audience that there is a lot of good that's happening out there and to salute it.
Sometimes when I'm feeling punk, I'll go get, you have these little graphics with beautiful quotes, and I'll go tweet them out just to sort of make me feel good. The favorite is when you often use etiquette is the science of living. Or, you know, something on the importance of kindness. So anyway, but there's a lot of inspiration if people want to plug in, and I recommend it. You also have courses for business and kids. There's a lot of kids materials, which we'll get into. But is all the courses online, or do you do them in person as well?
We really the place that we do the most training and teaching is in person, although recently we've been transitioning more and more of that material, more and more of our teaching material online. So we do have online courses. Just this last month, we finally released a dining etiquette course, something we've been working on, and finally got something that we really felt was good enough to represent the tradition, represent the basic ideas that we wanted to present well.
Uh-huh.
That's a continuing process, but we definitely have online business training, both for individuals and for groups. And like I say, our newest offering is a dining etiquette course that I'm quite happy with, I'll tell you.
Well, I have to say, I travel a great deal around the world and throughout America by car, and I just see endless opportunities for your family business going forward. Anyway, so let's dive into the role and importance of manners. Back to the very beginning of the Emily Post tradition, talk a little bit about the role and importance of manners.
Well, it's a concept that's as old as people getting together and sharing food, really. We are social creatures. We live in a web of social connections that we depend on, that are the way that we all survive. And ultimately, what we expect of each other socially, what we expect of ourselves in social situations, that's the heart of etiquette. It's really about navigating, for me, those expectations with ease and in a way that makes everyone comfortable. And that's the most essential sort of description that I can give of it. And of course, there are layers and layers of subtlety that you can start right. to apply to that understanding. But at its core, it's about the quality of the interactions that we have with each other. There's a slide I share in most presentations that I give. It's a quote from Emily Post where she says something to the effect of, etiquette is not some rigid code of manners. It's not a set of rules. It's simply how people's lives touch one another. And I call that the good news slide because I think a lot of people have a conception about etiquette that it's about a particular code of conduct that was established at a particular moment in time. And I see it as a living, breathing thing, as something that really is about the way that we connect with each other and the quality of those interactions. And to me, that's really good news. And I like hearing it in Emily's words also because it reminds me that that's been the core concept behind etiquette since my great-great-grandmother first started writing about it and thinking about it almost 100 years ago.
One of the quotes I wanted to use in our commentary when we published this is, from her, nothing is less important than which fork you use. Etiquette is the science of living. It embraces everything. It is ethics. It is honor. You know, I have to say, because I do believe that there is a place, a very valuable place for ritual in our lives. You know, I'll never forget my first day at college and picking up the wrong fork at lunch and everybody looking at me. And so, you know, so there is a place for knowing which fork to use and the rituals of these different things, which I think is invaluable.
I love that idea of ritual because it communicates, I think, well, the importance of these expectations
right.
that we have of each other and the way they actually convey meaning, that oftentimes our social expectations are in place for really practical reasons or significant reasons. We have this formula that we use at the Institute. We talk about etiquette being a combination of manners and principles, the sort of rudimentary ideas that etiquette equals manners plus principles. I tell people, write me the calculus equation. I really think etiquette are manners derived from principles, that principles are timeless and eternal. They're values, they're concepts that we can take with us through time and from one venue to another. So consideration, respect, and honesty are for us the core principles behind good etiquette. You might express
right.
those core principles differently in different situations, that in an era before cell phones, you didn't think about the disrespect that you could show by taking out a cell phone and answering it in the middle of a conversation. In
right.
one culture, you might greet someone in a different way than you greet them in another culture. The manners, the particular ways we show those core values or principles really do change, but they are part of the equation. those abstract principles are made explicit and recognizable in our behavior by the way we employ particular manners. And when you talk about the importance of the way you share food, this is a fundamentally important ritual. And one thing that we've noticed is that while some manners change very rapidly as you change locations or move through time, our manners around communication, that every time there's a new communication technology or revolution, manners change. If you were to look at the manners that I think are the most consistent, the ones that look the most similar in the 22 edition of etiquette and the 19th edition of etiquette, I think mm-hmm. they're the manners around the table. That within a particular cuisine, within a particular type of dining or particular dining tradition, table manners mm-hmm. change very slowly. It's not likely you're going to figure out a better way to eat with a fork than the billions of people that have eaten with a fork billions of meals before you.
Right.
So when you look at the basics for how you hold a knife and fork in the 22 edition, it's essentially the same as the 19th edition today.
Well, you know, I'm glad you said this, because the Celeri Report subscribers, we're very serious foodies. We have a big food series as part of our podcast. And I would say that you're in Vermont, which is a state full of very serious foodies.
So. We're growing in that capacity, no question, no question.
Uh-huh. Oh, wonderful. Okay, well, let's move on, because one of the greatest challenges for our group is, how do we maintain our manners in a society which seems to be increasingly uncivil? So how do you navigate an uncivil society, maintain your manners, maintain and feel inspired on the importance of good manners when you're watching the manners around you slip away or debase?
Yeah, this is an eternal question. I think every generation witnesses the changes that occur in manners over a lifetime and mm-hmm. thinks that it's possible the state of manners are in decline. I also think that it's probably true that it can feel dire when you're in that situation, but that manners, I think they're like a pendulum that swings. I think old
right.
manners lose their utility, fall out of fashion, and new manners emerge. And
right.
that I think you can take heart in that each generation will do some assessment about what's still functional, what's still useful, but will ultimately adopt a code of conduct that makes sense, and that this is a process of renewal that continues. I tell people my great-great-grandmother got questions about grandkids that didn't write thank you notes. My grandmother got questions about grandkids that don't write thank you notes. I get questions about grandkids that don't. I'm hoping someday, if I steward this tradition well, my daughter will get questions about grandkids that don't write thank you notes.
Yeah, but first you're going to have to teach her about the importance of writing thank you notes.
This is every generation's burden and challenge, and also honor and privilege, that I think it's up to all of us to take responsibility for the people we have the most responsibility for, and that's ourselves. That you
right.
very rarely have the standing to correct anyone else's etiquette or behavior, that you can have the most impact when you can recommit yourself to treating people with consideration, respect, and kindness and honesty. That some people think of manners or etiquette as something that you know. And I like to tell people it's a practice. It's something that you do. It's something that you continually recommit to in your life. That you show appreciation and gratitude. And that's not just in your professional life after a big opportunity or promotion, although that's important. But it's also to your family, to the people that you see every day, to the person that you just see once on the street who does something nice to you or smiles in a way that picks you up, that ultimately it really is a practice. And no one's perfect. We're mm-hmm. all going to be responsible for committing the unintentional rudeness or the inconsiderate act, that you apologize when you make those mistakes, that you move on. You don't dwell in
right.
sort of discomfort or guilt either. I think that it's important to approach it like that. And I tell people when confronted with rudeness, this is a question we get often at the Emily Post Institute. I've been confronted with this rudeness, or I'm witnessing this bad behavior. What do I do, or how do I respond? And so often the really good answer is you hold yourself accountable. You take the high road. Ultimately, it's the place that you want to be. Everyone's
right.
familiar with that idea. Two wrongs don't make a right. Well, two rudes don't make a right either.
Right.
It can be a more minor infraction, and you still want to hold yourself accountable, rise above it. These aren't excuses to throw up our hands or to get too judgmental towards other people.
Right.
That really it's up to all of us to be responsible for our own orientation as well as behavior.
Right.
And
I have to tell you a story. I had a wonderful ally who ran the Confederate Museum in Washington, and the Smithsonian asked him to give a speech on Southern tradition, Southern culture. And a youngster, someone your age, jumped up in the middle of the speech and said, you know, why should I listen to this? How is it relevant to me? And John Edward Hurley leaned back and he said, young man, culture is the integration of the divine in everyday life. So, the question whenever I'm faced with someone who's really being unreasonable is, you know, how does that divine intelligence come down into a practical application in that situation of, you know, how do you navigate this towards something more positive?
And that's the real test. It really is. I mean, when everything's going smoothly, when everyone is at their best, it's easy to be at your best. And the real challenge, I think, that's up to all of us to embrace is, how do you maintain that positive alignment? How do you continue to find that grace, to find that, in the language of your friend, that sense of divinity in what you're doing?
Right.
And that seems like really lofty language, and at the same time, we're talking about our connection to each other, which is a fundamentally important thing.
Well, that's the reason I find myself going back to your website, because I need to get, it's like an oasis. I need to get refreshed and be around a group of people who are saying, this is important, this is important, this is important. You know, I went through a period of very high stress once, and I used to always, you know, when nothing else would work, I would either walk out back and visit my cousin's cows, or I'd listen to Bach's Goldberg Variations. So you're a little bit like a version of my cousin's cows or the Goldberg Variations for me when it comes to civil society. Let me ask you, what inspired you to write the book about digital manners?
It was the area of etiquette that was sort of the vanguard territory when I was first working at the Emily Post Institute about 10 years ago, particularly social media. People had started to get a pretty good idea about how to navigate the world with a mobile device in their hands. The smartphone wasn't quite as ubiquitous as it is today, but people were getting used to cell phone culture. But the advent of social media and the broad adoption, people using social media outside of just colleges, but all across all categories of American life, was really causing people to have a lot of questions about how to navigate this new space. And we've talked a lot about how etiquette is this part of our social fabric, part of the way we connect to each other. It has a lot to do with social expectation. And this was the new territory where people were interacting, developing relationships. It was affecting long-established relationships. Kids who'd been on Facebook, whose parents were now joining, were trying to figure out what that meant. I mean, just to take you back in time a little bit, that was some of the type of question that was starting to emerge. How do I handle professional relationships in these spaces, which had felt so kind of new and a little bit risky, but also kind of safe? Questions of public and private, how you manage your public and private life in these new spaces, weren't really settled yet in people's minds. So it was really inspired by the environment and the times.
So I also wanted to bring up the question of family wealth, because what I've noticed after many years, I just closed my individual investment advisory practice, but after many years of working with families and family businesses, one of the things you notice is that understanding manners and kindness are so important. You know, people who marry kind people end up healthier and often wealthier than people who end up marrying people who are uncivil, number one. And also, it's the same with businesses. Businesses where the leadership knows how to lead people and interact with people, whether it's client, customers, you know, whomever, it makes an enormous difference over many, many decades. You see it when you look at things on a very long period. And so whether it's your health or your wealth, etiquette and navigating graciously, navigating with kindness is very, very important to success, which, of course, leads us back to how do you teach your children and grandchildren the habits that are going to produce success. Any tips on how you communicate to, you know, to the children that you love, whoever they are, the importance of this for their success?
Well, I'll use my mother's language. She wrote a book that's for parents and teachers about teaching etiquette, and she called the book The Gift of Good Manners. And it was from an Emerson quote, but it might have been, oh boy. Now I'm gonna mangle. I don't want to misrepresent it. But
that's okay. Go ahead.
With manners being the best gift that you could give any child, because they really equip them for a lifetime. So her whole approach to teaching manners was that this is a gift that you're giving your children. And she developed our teacher training program for parents and teachers. And when she was teaching that program, which I co-taught with her for years, she started off by using language. She used to say, model the behavior you want to see. It's the most important thing you could do. And she abandoned that language of model the behavior because she even thought that was too conditional. She started to say, be the parent that you want your kids to be, that this isn't a mantle that you can put on and take off, that the children are watching you all the time. They are learning by absorbing who you are and what you do all the time. And that means holding yourself accountable and really being that parent or being that person that you want your kids to be or the kids that you're teaching to be. And I love that. I loved watching that evolution in the way she talked about it. She became more and more committed to the idea that really was about you and your behavior and your conduct, that she could develop a set of teaching tools, and she did, for children at different stages of social development, but that ultimately the most effective thing you could do was to treat your kids with consideration, respect, and honesty, and that's what would teach them to be that kind of person. So, and I think that's a remarkable challenge to give people. And it sounds so obvious when you say it, and at the same time, it really is. It's the practice of recommitting to that all the time. Exactly. Do you cheat on your taxes? Do you tell your spouse to tell that person who called that you're not home? That's a lie. You've got to be really careful with your own conduct all the time.
Right.
Something else that just is music to my ears as I hear you talking, and I say only partially in jest, that we also have a business train the trainer program, and you should come take it because you could teach our business etiquette training when you talk about the organizational benefits of good behavior and the cost of bad behavior. It really is
expensive,
but fundamental to understanding how business cultures work and organizational cultures are maintained, to be thinking about cultures and climates of civility and respect as foundation for good customer service, good employee relationships that allow people to work and be productive. And the studies are endless that talk about the costs of bad behavior, the costs in losing personnel, the costs in lost work time from rude behavior. And from the academic research, it's a definition I love to share with people. Rudeness is oftentimes defined as behavior that causes emotional harm or distress, but isn't so egregious that someone's likely to mention it to you. And
here's
if you think
one
about how insidious that is, it's really dangerous.
It's very dangerous. Here's one of the challenges, Dan, and I see it with my subscribers all the time, and it's one of the reasons I try to stay in a state of amusement and to stay coherent. But a lot of times in our society, we're dealing with people or institutions that on the face have excellent manners, but on the substance, you know, I do a lot of work with financial fraud. They're stealing your money. And so if you're dealing with a fraudster who's got great, you know, superficial manners, not real manners, there's a, You know, there's sort of a multiple personality that you're dealing with. And so many subscribers are running into this multiple personality phenomena, you know, and their style and their substance, and they may be, you know, they may be good on one or bad on both. You know, some fraudsters are absolute bullies. And so people are getting tricked, and that's confusing them about the importance of good manners, and that good manners is more than style. It's really substance. If I'm being nice to you, but I'm, you know, illegally emptying your pocket, that's not good manners.
Absolutely not. The right. Third core principle for us is honesty. So that, right. That's integrity. That's both authenticity in terms of how you represent yourself, as well as sort of basic honesty in terms of how you conduct your business. There's something from dining etiquette that I think, believe it or not, translates here. And that's, we often say to people, safety trumps etiquette. If someone
right.
has so much, you don't let them drive home. If someone's choking, you knock the chair over and give them, like, slap on their back and give them the Heimlich maneuver. That
right, you don't care if you break the china or not.
No, if something's so hot in your mouth, it's burning you, get it out of your mouth. We'll worry
right.
about spitting at the table later. There is sort of a safety trumps etiquette concept. I'd say that's where, from diplomacy, it's trust but verify.
right.
That deal with people as if they have integrity, assume the best of others till they prove otherwise, but protect yourself.
Right.
Care on a fundamental level.
Don't burn your tongue.
And I think all that's important, exactly. And but to me, when you start to get back into the question of etiquette, is again, this is where you get into the subtlety around authenticity and how genuine you are.
Right.
Oftentimes, organizations represent themselves a certain way, but is it believable? Well, is it backed up by the quality of the work that they do, the actual content of the work that they do? And is it also believable? Is it a customer service line that's been generated, or is the person who's delivering it, who welcomes you when you walk through the door, authentic and believable? Are they happy with the work that they do? Do they feel supported by that business in a way that they can deliver that line so that it's true? And I think that's where you start to get into the interesting work of applying good etiquette. But in a very practical sense, too, you're also, when you're talking about fraud, you're talking about people that are operating outside of the norms that you would usually expect people to operate in, and that's just really difficult. I mean, there's no question about that.
Well, but here's the thing. To navigate society today, you have to navigate, you know, dealing with people who don't have integrity. And I think the hardest thing, the thing that gets the most complicated, there are two things that get really complicated for me. One is maintaining manners when you have to navigate a society when you're dealing with people who have anywhere from high integrity to no integrity. That's number one. But number two, you're going back through multiple cultures. So the kind and gracious thing to do in one culture is offensive in another culture. And so
yeah.
That's why I said, when I looked at your resume and I realized, oh, he's got a degree in molecular biology, I thought, oh, how perfect. Because the complexity becomes quickly mind-boggling.
It's true. And
right.
Then the other part of that story is that I then worked in the performing arts for almost 10 years, for almost a decade. And so I definitely had the time in the hard sciences and then the time in the
right.
the performing arts. And I find both are, frankly, really helpful when I'm talking about
right.
navigating human behavior and human expectations. There's a concept that's gotten really popular in training circles in the last few years. And sometimes it's presented as the platinum rule and the evolution of the golden rule, that it's no longer enough to treat everybody the way you would like to be treated. That's a good baseline concept, and
uh-huh.
Something that I often hear when I do word association with the word etiquette when I'm doing trainings. People will say,
uh-huh.
"Well, treat other people the way you'd want to be treated." And
right.
I'm starting to hear when I ask people that there will oftentimes be a hand that comes up in the audience that says, "You've also got to treat other people the way they would want to be treated."
Right.
And this idea that you're able to navigate a world that is increasingly diverse and complex, and that you're able to think about where other people are coming from and what their expectations might be and what would make them feel comfortable is an idea that's I think on the forefront of many people's minds. It's not an entirely new idea. When Emily wrote the first book of etiquette in 22, the particular social challenges that her world was responding to were industrialization and immigration on a huge scale. People were moving from rural communities to urban centers and were immigrating from other countries on a level that America hadn't really experienced before. And it was this real mix of cultures and expectations that was one of the reasons that there was such a demand for information and people thinking and talking and writing intelligently about how to navigate social expectations.
Right. Well, if you look at the sales of the book, it was explosive, including right through the recession and the depression. I mean, it's quite remarkable.
Yeah. One of my favorite editions was the post-World War II edition was one where she made some of her most significant editorial changes.
Really?
And she was really reckoning with the emergence of the American middle class. I think to get into sort of a historiography here of Emily Post Etiquette, there was a conceit for the early editions that she was revealing a code of conduct that really functioned for what was known as best society back when she wrote the first edition, a term of art, hers, not mine. But that by the third edition that you got from your mother, she had introduced a character named Miss 3-in-1, who was hosting a dinner party without the help of a butler, a cook, and a servant. She went from the world characters named the top lofties, the old worldies, to Miss 3-in-1. And by that post-World War II edition, Miss 3-in-1 was really the dominant character in the book. That evolution, that transition had really happened sort of in a way that really permeated the entire book. I think that the chapter with behavior for how you navigated moving from one box to another at the opera had disappeared at that point.
Well, actually, since I'm an opera fan, that's one I continue to need.
I know, and for the person who's who works in the performing arts and really treasures that experience, I know.
Okay, well, let's before I ask you to, I just want to touch back on how to use the resources of the Institute to follow up on this. I just have to ask you, because no matter how much I believe that manners are important and kindness is important and graciousness is important, all of which I do, occasionally I lose it. As the Soleri team can tell you, I lose it. Now, when I lose it, I'm just any old person. But when you lose it, you're one of the heirs of the greatest etiquette tradition on the planet, and everybody knows it. That must be a terrible burden to carry. Do you ever lose it?
I do, although actually not that often. It's more that I make mistakes that I just feel embarrassed about than I tell people in the sort of emotional response world, know yourself, and I'm more of a fighter than a fighter. I've never sent an angry email in my life. I don't usually explode at people, but...
Oh, Lord, I'm impressed.
Well, no, but I face a different set of challenges. For me, it's the challenge of not withdrawing, of being sure to stay responsive when I'm communicating with people, that I don't... I don't fail to engage socially. So I have a different set of social challenges, I think. But no, growing up in the Post tradition, I think at its best, Emily Post Etiquette is about bringing a sense of comfort and ease to social interactions, and I think that makes everyone feel better. And ultimately, you've got to be able to do that when you err, when you make mistakes, when you slip up, as well as when things are going smoothly. So,
right, because everybody's going to slip up.
You're welcome.
Right.
I'm sorry, pardon me, excuse me, are also magic words.
Okay, so I really want to make sure that everybody understands how to find the website, how to find the resources. You've got books, you've got courses, you've got podcasts. You know, you've got a lot. So just march us through how to access the website and the different resources that they can use. And let's focus particularly on, you know, this year for birthday and Christmas, if we were going to give something to the kids in our family that we love, you know, to help them, what would we do? What would we give them?
So emilypost.com is our main website. It's a great jumping off point. And you can find information about all of our different programs. There's a bookstore there that has links to all of our books. We have that Gift of Good Manners book that I mentioned that's really for parents and teachers, but we also have children's books for kids at all stages of social development. So that's pre-reader, toddler, preteen. For teens, I really think that treating them like adults is really where they're at in terms of their social development. So oftentimes, right, a gift of the Big Book of Etiquette is a great graduation present for someone, high school or college, as they start to head out on their own and think about how they're going to navigate life. I would also mention, in terms of just sort of keeping touch with the Emily Post Institute, we're on social media, and we have a Facebook account, we have a Twitter account, we have an Instagram account, and all of those are linked to off of our website. We have a blog that's a daily etiquette blog called Etiquette Daily, where we post a daily calendar etiquette reminder, and we also cycle through questions and answers that are frequently asked questions that we get at the Institute. So it's another way to get a daily dose of etiquette that's a nice way to stay connected.
And when you do the podcast, you list the questions that you answered in that one?
We do. So in the description of every show, and you can find the Awesome Etiquette Podcast on any podcast app, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, you name it. In the description of the show, there's a little list of the questions that we're going to cover in that episode.
Well, I really want to put a plug in for Getting the Manners in a Digital World, Living Well Online, because I think it's something I see both parents, grandparents, and kids struggling with. And so taking the spirit and the details of etiquette and taking it into that world, I think, you know, you described taking it into a whole new world after World War II, but I think the digital book takes it, you know, into a whole new world again. It's a leap forward. So, very big one. I know where our second quarter wrap up is, the main theme is the rise of the Asian consumer, and it's about the rise of the Asian middle class and a lot of the sort of multiple personalities of culture that I'm dealing with is in this rise of the Asian middle class. So it wouldn't surprise me if that's going to be one where you have to take it to a whole new level, because American cities are going to end up being real multicultural pots, just very similar to what your great-great-grandmother was dealing with. Anyway, so, Dan, any other thoughts you want to contribute before we close?
Well, only that it's been a pleasure. It's really nice to have a chance to have a long-form discussion about some of this. It really is nice to be able to get beyond the soundbite or the five-minute interview and really have a discussion. So thank you for having me.
Well, that's what we do, but also I just have to tell you, I think what you're doing and what the Institute is doing is exceptionally important. I think if we're going to integrate technology but have a human future, you know, it's very important that people have support and guidance on how to maintain humanity, how to be human, how to revive and maintain our culture. And I think the Institute is making just an invaluable and important contribution. So I thank you for the inspiration you've given me. I thank you for all the training you've given my family, even though I resisted it mightily until about the age of 30.
That's classic, right?
So your family has been an incredible gift to me and my family, and I just want to tell you how much I appreciate it. And with that, let me just thank you and say have a wonderful day. And thank you for joining us on the Solaire Report.
It was my pleasure.
Bye.